From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Steelworkers in Granite City, Illinois, have at least a two-year reprieve from major changes at the plant. But what exactly that means for them is an open question. This all comes after Japan's Nippon Steel, or Nippon if you prefer the Japanese pronunciation, after it finally succeeded in acquiring U.S. Steel last month, including Granite City Works. The deal has some unusual provisions, including giving the President of the United States a veto over certain changes at the company.
And we have a golden stock, we have a golden share, which I control or President controls. Now, I'm a little concerned whoever the President might be, but that gives you total control. It's 51% ownership by Americans.
Today, we're going to talk about what Nippon's ownership of U.S. Steel means for the 950 or so steelworkers in Granite City. Joining me now to talk about this is Craig McKee, president of Steelworkers Local 1899, which represents the men and women of Granite City Works. Craig, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Jason Chisholm, a regional leader with United Steelworkers. His title is Sub-District Director. Jason, welcome to you as well.
Yeah, thanks thanks for having me.
And finally, Stephen Heifetz is a partner at the law firm Wilson Sonsini. He previously served on the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, or CFIUS as it's known. That's the federal entity that reviewed the U.S. Steel-Nippon deal. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. What do you think of this deal? And what do you think of President Trump's golden share, giving him veto power over some of U.S. Steel's decisions? And how do you think this deal will affect steelworkers here and around the country? 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Craig McKee, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit, for people in other parts of the state who may not be as familiar, what is Granite City Works? What do you make there?
We make hot roll, cold roll, and coated sheet steel products. A lot of it goes to the construction, container industry, pipe and tube, service centers, which make all different kinds of stuff, and the automotive industry also.
What is the status of operations today?
Currently, right now, we don't have our steel making operations running. We idled one blast furnace in 2019, about the time of COVID, and then we idled the second one in October of 23. So right now, currently, we get slabs, which we make in our steel making area, sent in from sister facilities, and we're processing those slabs through our finishing lines, the hot strip mill, cold mill, and then into the coating lines.
What has that meant for employment at the works, you know, compared to when both blast furnaces are going full on to what you're doing now?
Probably affected about upwards of 500 jobs here at the mill over the years since 2019 when we first idled the first one.
All right, Jason Chisholm, can you speak just, I guess, a little more broadly about how the mill, you know, how important is the mill and these operations to the city and the region?
Well, there's naturally, it's super important. You know, we've had our ups and downs here at the mill through the years, unfortunately, and this one here just is different, and the impact that this poses to the community here is, you know, for every one steelworker job in the facility, there's 6 to 7 ancillary jobs outside the facility. You know, it's your tool and die shops, your outside construction folks, you know, folks that come in and out of the mill every day, you know, those types of things. Plus, you know, you have your impacts for your, you know, your restaurant activity, you know, even all the way down to your, you know, your bars and grills.
Craig, has talk about how past foreign investment has affected U.S. steelworkers.
Well, I'm about 28 years in the steel industry here, and this will be the third time we've went through this. And every time it has been mainly attributed to foreign, sometimes illegally dumped, sometimes even subsidized by other countries, steel coming into the United States. And it has a terrible impact on us every time.
Are you hopeful or not hopeful? How would you say you're feeling, you know, based on this latest deal?
It you know, so let me kind of just get you up to speed on what we've been living. So in September of 2022, U.S. Steel announced a letter of intent to sell our blast furnace operations to Gateway Energy and Coke, which is a plant next door that actually supplies us with blast furnace coke now. And that was all prior to the Nippon deal. So they had told us then that they had planned on, like I said, it was just a letter of intent, but had planned on selling the blast furnaces, cease making steel here in Granite, and slowly close down all the rest of the mill, which would be our hot strip mill, cold mill, pickle line. And they had planned on running Triple G for a little bit. But in 2022, they pretty much told us we was going to be shut down over a two-year period. And then the Nippon thing come along. But it appears to us, more at your question there, is they don't. We don't know for sure because they aren't telling us anything, but we kind of think that they might follow U.S. Steel's original plan and do just what they said they was going to do in 22, which would kind of coincide with them saying now they would not make any more changes here until 27, sometime late 27.
So uncertain at the moment, but you have a suspicion maybe that they will eventually do what U.S. Steel was going to do, which is eventually, I guess, wind down operations.
Yeah, I would anticipate, but I know that talking with management here at the facility, Nippon has took a hard look at our plant, and there are some other business plans out there. Ultimately, since President Trump and his administration got this deal done, Nippon has been sending some folks over, engineers and different things. So they're kind of getting feedback from our plant manager here and the Scott McKaiser, who's the guy that runs North American Flat Roll, that, you know, it's going to take them a little bit to figure out what actual business plan they're going to go with. So everything's up in the air.
All right. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking about U.S. Steel's acquisition by Nippon, the Japanese company, what it means specifically for steel workers here in Illinois at the Granite City Works in the Metro East part of the state. We're talking with Craig McKee, president of Steelworkers Local 1899, and a regional official with United Steelworkers, Jason Chisholm, and Stephen Heifetz. I want to bring you into the conversation now. You focus on national security and trade at Wilson Sonsini, the law firm. You were also on the committee on foreign investment in the United States, CFIUS, previously, which is the entity in the federal government that reviewed the U.S. Nippon deal. Tell us about this deal, how it differs from other foreign investment deals in the United States.
Well, this deal attracted an unusual amount of attention. Obviously, U.S. Steel is headquartered in Pennsylvania, which was a politically important state for the election, and the deal was announced in the run-up to the election, so it received a lot of attention. And the review process by CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, was unusually long. The entire process took well in excess of a year. So there were a lot of unusual aspects. You know, ultimately, the deal was approved, and that's probably helpful for nearly everybody. But the length of time and the unusual arrangements that accompanied the deal that allowed the deal to clear probably make it harder for foreign investors in general, and that is worrisome, I think.
Talk about this idea of this golden share. Why was that negotiated into the deal? What does that mean?
Yeah, well, there were, I think, three things. The arrangements that led to the approval consist, I would say, of three buckets. There were some traditional, some things that CFIUS sometimes does when they have national security concerns about a foreign acquisition or investment. So those are things like, you can't move a facility outside the United States without approval, traditional national security things. Then there were some opportunistic, I would say, provisions that require Nippon to make significant financial investments in certain facilities, new and old. And then lastly, there were what I would characterize as optics, the golden characterizing this arrangement as a golden share and having President Trump directly involved as opposed to CFIUS, which consists of federal agencies that report to the president. It's usually CFIUS that's the agencies that are involved rather than the president directly. And those optical issues, calling it a golden share, President Trump's involvement, I think helped the administration characterize this as a partnership rather than the acquisition that it actually is. And it was seemingly very important to the administration to characterize the arrangements as a partnership in contrast to an acquisition. So I would say that the golden share label and certain other aspects are optical things that were important to the administration to help characterize it again as a partnership rather than the acquisition that it is.
Optical, like for appearances' sake, I guess.
Yes, correct.
Jason Chisholm, what do you think of that? Does it make you feel any better about this deal that President Trump took a personal interest and has this golden share, as it's called?
No, I mean, let's be real about it. I mean, the golden share, is a extraordinary thing because it covers so many basic company functions, even including possibly collective bargaining. I mean, we really don't know because it's new. It's never been granted before to any president, to my knowledge. And it remains to be seen whether these rights are either used forcibly or whether it'll either, maybe it'll even be forgotten about, consistent with what you guys are talking about with the optical stuff.
Oh, that's interesting. So when you say collective bargaining, I suppose, is it a concern of yours that it could be used sort of against workers, against organized workers?
Well, I mean, there possibly could be some concerns with those types of things.
Yeah. Stephen Heifetz, I mean, do other countries do this sort of thing when they're contemplating investment like this, deals like this?
They do, and I should emphasize, CFIUS reviews typically several hundred transactions per year. They have the authority to review in excess of 10,000 transactions. So just the U.S. National Security Review Authority takes a look at lots of transactions, and in a few dozen, they impose some conditions. And some of the conditions here, again, unusual that the person who has the authority to utilize those conditions is the president. But the conditions themselves, at least many of them, appear in other transactions, as many as a couple dozen transactions per year. So some of this is, again, optics, and some of it is the optics, particularly being the president and the characterization of the golden share. But other things are more typical of what CFIUS does. Again, the veto of removing facilities overseas, that is not uncommon for CFIUS. And other countries do have industries that they protect by way of whether you call it a golden share or other veto authorities. So it is quite common for certain European countries to have for the government to be able to exercise veto authorities over certain decisions by large defense manufacturers. And in some countries, that is called they get a stake in the company and veto authorities, and that is sometimes called a golden share.
Let me share some messages we got from our listeners. You can join us today, by the way, at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. John in Harvard, Illinois, says in a text message, it's typical bamboozlement. The Japanese will shred U.S. steel. There was no reason for a deal, especially if tariffs work. We are down to Cleveland Cliffs as the last U.S. vertically integrated mill, and it's run by a nice Italian guy. And another texter mentioned that, didn't give a name, but said, I think if Cleveland Cliffs was interested, they should have been favored in the acquisition. There'd be no debate. I think the president should have power over private companies, especially manufacturing. Federal regulation is different and good, but this is weird. Maybe he meant to say the president shouldn't have power over these companies. Anyways, he says, I hope the Granite facility stays open. I don't know about the conditions there, but the outlook seems bleak. We're going to talk more about this after a break. Again, if you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. More on Nippon's acquisition of U.S. Steel and what it means for Granite City, Illinois after a break. This is The 21st Show.
Support for the 21st show comes from listeners like you and the Des Moines Arts Center, located in Iowa's capital city, featuring works by regional, national, and international artists of the 20th and 21st centuries. Details are at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.
It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about Nippon's acquisition of U.S. Steel. My guests for this conversation are Stephen Heifetz, partner at Wilson Sonsini, who is also a former member of the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, which is the federal entity that reviewed the U.S. Steel-Nippon deal. Also, Jason Chisholm, sub-district director for the United Steelworkers, including Illinois, and Craig McKee, president of Steelworkers Local 1899, which represents U.S. Steel workers in Granite City at the Granite City Works. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. Lloyd in Danville, Illinois, sent us a text, said the decision to move American construction interests economically to foreign markets is why Americans are so frustrated with politicians and big economic stakeholders. Trump got elected because so many Americans lost their jobs to outsourcing and foreign markets taking over parts of America's economies. It's a shame, he says. Again, 800-222-9455. All right, Craig McKee, what would you have liked to have seen in this deal between Nippon and U.S. Steel that maybe was left out?
Well, as I said earlier, you know, we was kind of pieced out of it before it ever got started, and it kind of stayed that same with their commitments moving forward. You know, our hope was that maybe since the deal did get done, that they might have other plans for the future of this mill here. We're a very productive facility. When U.S. Steel took us over in 2003, they had every intention of shutting this mill down then, kind of peeled us apart from the other national facilities and realized then that, hey, when we're asked to provide, to make product, we do it and we do it well. So they kind of continued to invest over the years. And that's, you know, our hope is that maybe Nippon would see the same thing and change the path of what they laid out for us in 2022.
What's the mood been like among steelworkers there? I mean, How are they?
Oh, it's very bad. I mean, the morale's down. These are very tough jobs. We're going into the hot part of the season. So yeah, it's draining on everybody. I know as a local union president and even sub-district director Chisholm that, you know, we interact with this membership quite a bit. And since all this stuff's transpired, it's never something positive. Somebody's going through a hardship or there's issues with, you know, all different kinds of stuff in the mill where they're in a reduced state and losing money and all that stuff associated with it. So yeah, it's a tough time.
Jason Chisholm, how about you? How do you see that? I mean, do you have a hard time keeping people in the field interested? Are people trying to migrate away to other jobs, that kind of thing?
Well, naturally, the state we're in, we would recall folks off layoff if we have a need for in the facility. But, you know, I mean, it's known right there, right now, out in the community right now, I think in 2019, when we started recalling folks from an idle, you know, we went out and we hired 750 folks, U.S. Steel, so that's going to be an interesting situation, if we're posed with that. And we welcome this. I don't say this in a bad situation, but right now people are, not so optimistic to come to work for you if you're only going to talk about being open for 2 years, right? So, there's that stigmatism out there as well.
Stephen Heifetz, talk about the balance between, trying to block a deal like this in the name of national security, but on the other hand, maybe too much regulation ultimately is not good for national security. How do you think about that balance?
Yeah, that has been a longstanding issue. The United States, until the last decade or so, had a pretty clear open investment policy, meaning that foreign investors, foreign money, welcome. And the United States has benefited tremendously by far and away beyond any other country from having such an open investment policy. The U.S. has the largest stock of foreign investment by far. And that has advanced national security by helping lots and lots of U.S. companies get access to capital and draw technology from outside the United States. Over the course of the last decade, particularly the last 8 years, there has been a shift to a much greater skepticism of foreign investment. So this deal, the CFIUS's actions in this deal are perhaps emblematic of a greater skepticism, more willingness, more interest on the part of the government in making it harder to accept foreign money. And I think in the long run, that is likely to undermine rather than advance U.S. Security, even though the obstacles are being placed in the name of national security. So it is a tough balance, but I think, for about 80 years, the United States did pretty good job of focusing on national security, narrowly understood. And in the last decade, the pivot away from an open investment policy, I think, is concerning because the U.S. ability to draw capital, to act as a magnet, has served the United States well.
How does this fit in with this, this idea that the president have of this America First economic agenda, as he puts it?
Well, I think that in the long run, the building of barriers to investment in the United States will actually be counterproductive from a U.S. security standpoint and an economic standpoint. So I'm skeptical that the America First investment, first of all, it's not entirely clear what is meant other than making it harder to invest, but I think in the long run it is the building of barriers is going to be undermining of security as well as economic welfare.
Jason, let me ask you: it used to be that labor was pretty closely tied in with Democrats. There's been that really isn't always the case anymore. How do you think about American politicians, people in government, and how responsive they are to the politics of your members? And Jason Chisholm, I'll put that to you, if I may.
Hey, Brian, if I may, can I go back to something that you asked me previously here?
Sure,
From the onset, whenever Nippon got involved, there's been this whipsawing action going on. you know, on the political world, you know, and with Nippon and U.S. Steel, and it's been somewhere around 18 months. And in the whole entire time, you know, like specifically here for Granite City, I'll speak to, you know, our members out there that are currently working and the ones that are currently laid off, you know, they're trying to make the best decisions for their families moving forward. So when we say that we don't know, you know, what our future holds here for us, you know, that's a truly a huge significant thing, because, you know, we, you know, our members and their families have dedicated their lives, you know, have put together careers here, you know, have made this company, U.S. Steel, millions and millions of dollars through the years, you know, and you know, we want them to invest in this workforce here at Granite City Works. You know, so when you was asking me that question, you know, I mean, I just wanted to go back to that, because that's the significance of what we're dealing with here. We're talking about people's careers, you know, losing benefits, you know, and trying to save family sustaining jobs here, here in Granite City.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you on that. Craig McKee, maybe I'll try you with that other question I was wondering about. Do you feel that either of the major parties in American politics that you know, are there people that have your members' interests at heart, or Do you think that they're forgetting?
Well, look, there's a clear line that we can kind of gauge that off of, because there's voting records out there, right? So our international and us as locals, we look at the political world as, you know, who's representing those core values, retirements, pensions, all the stuff Jason just talked about. But in reality, you do have members out there that go to the polls and vote for all the other issues, right? The international doesn't tell people how to vote. They educate us about the things that affect us in the workplace, and then leave it up to us. So, I mean, you're going to have a whole wide spectrum of difference of opinions in politics, not just here locally at my local, but, you know, our union's one of the most diverse unions in the country, and they got to stick to those core values. So we get it. We understand it. As far as what, you know, we feel the international does, I can tell you that most of my membership here in Granite City didn't support this deal, because as Jason was talking earlier, some of the documents that were shared before, the fact that Nippon's been a, you know, what we would say probably a serial trade problem for the United States, and the fact that, you know, the international represents a lot of members at Cleveland Cliffs also. So we, you know, we still agree that there is some national security interest. It wasn't all optics, because we've seen what the damage steel comes in. So for Nippon to come in with some empty promises, so to say, you have this language that they've had in there about force majeure. And, you know, typically that's outside the control of any party, you know, natural disasters. But all along this way, it's included stuff Jason referenced earlier about, you know, labor disputes and different things like that. So, you know, if things go bad next year in contract bargaining, and you know, like Jason said, we don't know what this golden share means for all that, but they could simply walk away from everything that they've agreed to invest throughout this 18 months of getting this deal across the finish line. So that in itself, we do believe that we need to protect, you know, what steelmaking capacity we have here in the States. And if the commitment's all there and followed through on, you know, we're still looking at 2035, seeing what Nippon does with the assets they have here in the United States. And partially the national security issue, as I know it, is these integrated mills like the one here at Granite City are able to make grades of steel that they aren't able to get to with an electric arc furnace or different things. And, you know, Nippon shut down some blast furnaces in Japan recently. So all of that, you know, is kind of where we're at. That being said, as Jason alluded to, we got careers and stuff. So now that this deal's happened, we would hope that the right things happen. And, you know, we would get get some of the benefit of this deal going through and hope that, you know, they continue to do business here at this mill as they have for the last 120 plus years.
Craig McKee and Jason Chisholm with United Steelworkers and Stephen Heifetz with Wilson Sonsini. Thanks for being with us, sharing your perspectives with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you.